Good evening, everyone. My name is Gordon, one of the ministers here. Well, it's hard not to like a good nativity play. I have seen many in my years, and I still love them. Kids, costumes, budding acting talent, little sheep that threaten to steal the show. They're so cute. Always a lot of hard work in preparation, but it's always worth it. But what do we really think of the story that it's telling? See, we portray it by kids, sheets, tea towels wrapped around their heads and so on. And so is that what it is? Is it just a kid's story? Angels, virgin, conception, dreams. I mean, it sounds like the stuff of fantasy. Or is it history? History that has an impact even today. If we let the accounts of the first Christmas speak for themselves, the stories in the Bible, the answer becomes very clear. And I want to look very briefly at the four accounts of the birth of Jesus that we saw portrayed in that nativity play just now. And they come from these parts of the Bible. The first one was what Rowena just read for us from Luke chapter 1. And in Luke 1, you have an encounter with the angel Gabriel and a young woman named Mary, telling her that she will bear a child. Now, if you wanted to make this up in the first century, invent a story that other people are going to believe, you would not have done it like this. Because in the first century, in the Jewish world, in the Jewish culture, young women weren't considered reliable witnesses. You would not have had a young woman like Mary as the only witness. Now, if you wanted to invent this and, say, have your other people of your day believe it, you probably would have thrown a man in there somehow, like probably Mary's dad asleep in the corner and just suddenly he wakes up with the bright light or he bursts into the room saying, "Is that a man's voice I hear?" Oh, and suddenly you've got a male witness and maybe it gets a bit more traction. And Luke has none of that. Luke just records this young woman, Mary, as the only witness. It's a little bit like, I don't know, when the naughty boy at school, he's broken a window at lunchtime and you know he's done it, so the teacher calls him in, explain yourself, and he says, "I didn't do it. You could ask Jack and he'll tell you." But of course Jack's his best buddy and, whatever Jack says is going to be what... And it's not going to help, but at least he's tried. And that's what you do. When you're making something up and you know it's on thin ice, you kind of try and throw in some other bits of evidence that might convince someone. Luke doesn't. The only reason he would give you an account like this with only a young woman as the only witness is because that's what happened. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Mary, a young virgin, would bear God's Son. The second account. This is taken from Matthew chapter 1. And this is where the angel tells Joseph in a dream to take Mary as his wife. Now, at least culturally, here, the witness is a man. And so, okay, that might have given you a little bit of credibility. But culturally, what's described here was an absolute scandal, and it was very serious. I remember a few years ago when the first reboot of the Star Wars saga came out, and George Lucas said something like, well, a lot of ancient religions and myths had virgin births, trying to justify why he had a virgin birth in his movie. Oh, well, that's what they all did back then. Well, the people of Israel were monotheists. They only had one God. And their God did not visit earth a bit like the gods in the Greek legends, and they were always having liaisons with people and siring children through them. Israel wasn't like that. And a young woman found to have a child outside of marriage could be stoned to death. It was that serious. And if you said that you were carrying God's Son, that was blasphemy. And that would also have a death sentence to it. So this is incredibly serious. Now, Joseph, well, he just assumes that Mary had been with another man, and so he wants to break the engagement. But he's also a compassionate man, and so he wanted to do it quietly so that he would protect Mary. Well, the angel visited him in a dream and assured him everything that's going on here is from God. It's okay. And Joseph believed that and he took Mary home as his wife. And he also told the story. A story that could bring scandal to his name and put Mary in danger. Why not keep it secret? Because you could just take her home, marry her, no one needs to know, keep it secret. I mean, how many times, say, have you been booked for speeding and didn't tell anyone? There are some things that we just like to keep secret because our reputation's at stake. Why not keep this one secret? Well, some things are too important. Mary will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. The third part of the Bible that we looked at tonight comes from Luke 2. This is what Scott read for us, where the angels tell the shepherds about Jesus' birth. Now, once again, we have male witness, so maybe that's okay, and there are more than one, and so maybe that's even better. Sounding good so far, but while we might romanticise first century shepherds, especially through things like Christmas plays, Christmas cards, in the first century in Israel, shepherds were kind of an underclass. People looked down on them in polite society. You wouldn't have taken them very seriously. I mean, think Bogan and you're heading in the right direction. If you were making up a story, you were not going to throw in the local Bogans as the witnesses. You would have had more credible society witnesses, like a judge, a town judge, or a synagogue leader. Now, they would have made good witnesses. But shepherds? It's a bit like those restaurants you go to that have photos on the wall of the famous people that have been there, a celebrity, a movie star. Have you ever noticed that Bill and Fran Bloggs and their two ordinary kids never have their photo up there, or yours and mine for that matter, because frankly we don't lift the credibility of the restaurant. You need big names for that. Shepherds did not lift the credibility of this story. In fact, in the first century when this story was first recorded, shepherds, as your witnesses, would have kind of done the opposite to lifting the credibility. The only reason you would have witnesses that no one cares about is that they were the first witnesses. The angel said, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Saviour has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord." Well, the last account, this comes from Matthew, and it's Matthew chapter 2, where we have what are often referred to as the wise men from the east. Now, that sounds respectable. You have men, they're important visitors, and frankly, they look good in plays and they look great in Christmas cards. This has to be good. But, once again, if you put it back into the first century context, this was not such a positive thing. See, from the east meant they were foreigners. Now, Israel was a fiercely nationalistic nation. And they were a conquered nation by foreigners. And wise men, well, literally, as you have it in Bibles like our church Bible, the word is magi, not wise men, comes from a word magi, and that word is the word we get magic from. Now, not pulling a rabbit out of a hat magic, we're talking occult practice and astrology. These were things that were banned in Israel. They were forbidden under their law. There was nothing about these visitors that would have endeared themselves to the first hearers. If you could imagine, say, Frio or the Eagles advertising their new season, but not using their own players, actually getting some heavily accented Scottish Highland people wearing kilts and holding soccer balls, you would just think that doesn't fit. It doesn't help promote AFL. No offence to anyone from Scotland, by the way, but it just wouldn't promote your game. Well, these people don't really promote much in the first century of Israel, and if you were going to make this up, you wouldn't have them. Once again, the only reason that you would have them is that that's what happened. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. The Christmas story is not the stuff of fantasy. There are no typical elements of fantasy just sort of thrown in there to wow the reader. It's a story of humility, of understatement, and of society's nobodies. But see, God wasn't trying to impress anybody. He loves to work in situations that appear weak, weak to us that is, but are really expressions of the greatest power the world has known. Now that's why the story was retold in the first place and why it's been believed by countless people since. Is it a fantasy? Or is it a fantastic fact? Well, I think we need to take our cue from the shepherds. When they heard about Jesus, they went and saw, they investigated, and they were not disappointed. And the same thing will happen to us. If we investigate, when we let the accounts in the Bible speak for themselves, we won't be disappointed. We will be amazed and overjoyed at what God has done. "Do not be afraid," the angel said. "I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Saviour has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord." Thank you.